Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, May 15, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday. We finally made it. It always seems like the weeks get longer and longer. It is 63 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York, and I see on the map we have some rain coming, so it will be a little more tropical than it's been. We had a frost warning a couple nights ago. Thank God we didn't get frosted, but I'm ready for a little bit warmer weather. So yesterday, we took a look at artificial intelligence, brain project, Elon Musk predicting that within the next 5 years, and most certainly the 10, Google may accidentally, quote unquote, create evil robot armies. I was going to continue on that today, but hey, we have a surprise special guest on today. We always get excited when he has a day off and he's able to join us. Mr. Brandon Turberville is on the show with us today. Good morning, Brandon. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jules. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing okay.
Happy Friday.
Yeah, it is a happy Friday. Most Fridays are.
So what's going on down in your neck of the woods? I saw that you guys had your South Carolina military exercises going on, and you had a story on that about a week or so ago, and then I saw some of the news outlets kind of picked up on the story. It had been pretty quiet before then. What's going on down there with that?
Well, today is the last day of it. May 15th is the last scheduled day for the drills. It began on May the 8th. This was the Richland County Sheriff's Department. This Richland County in South Carolina, that is where Columbia is located. It's actually the most militarized police department in the country, actually, is in Richland County. This is per capita, but you know, still most militarized based on the population. And it was conducting drills with the U.S. military, the Special Forces Group out of Fort Bragg in North Carolina, mm-hmm. The 3rd Special Forces Group. So basically, it ran from May 8th and until today, and it's still going on. There was one report, only one report by WLTX that came out on May 8th, letting the citizens know that the Sheriff's Department and the military were working together, and that the citizens may see sheriff's department vehicles and military vehicles traveling in lower Richland County communities and near Eastover and Hopkins. And they also had some training going on near Elgin and Screaming Eagle Road was the place. If anybody recognizes these locations, but there's North Richland County had some participation, Monticello Road, that type of those areas. And the Sheriff's Department announced that the residents in these areas might hear explosives, they might hear ordnance being set off, they may hear shots being fired. And the sheriff, Leon Lott, who's a real piece of work over there, but he stated that the department's special response team would be working with the 3rd Special Forces Group. Now, if anybody doesn't know, it might vary from state to state, but a special response team, it's becoming increasingly popular in the smaller areas in South Carolina, smaller towns, sheriff's departments, and that sort of thing, which are already militarized enough. But the special response team it's not SWAT, but it's like SWAT. That's how it was described to me by a law enforcement officer when I asked about it. Basically, it's a SWAT team, whether they want to say that or not, but maybe it's an underfunded, it's a poor man SWAT team, I guess we should say, is they take maybe something like an old ambulance and they refurbish it, and then they put some bulletproof walls on the inside of it, and they can use that sort of as a poor man's MRAP. So it's not SWAT technically, but it's a SWAT-like, you know, formulation. So these guys are going to be working with the Special Forces Group, and the sheriff announced that the Sheriff's Department was going to provide simulated scenarios for the military, and then said that they were using that location because Richland County is an ideal location for training that they couldn't replicate at Fort Bragg. So whatever, he didn't elaborate as to what those scenarios might be or what the training was going to involve, but this we do have a precedent for Richland County Sheriff's Department and the U.S. military training together because I covered this last year, not quite a year ago. They trained together in the exact same locations. And when they did that, their simulations and training involved raiding farmhouses. It involved domestic raids against presumably American citizens raiding farmhouses. That involved setting up checkpoints, involved chopper insertion. And I've got an article up on that that people could look at and just see that, this is what they were doing. It's it had sources who were, I'll just say, close to the event that told me what the training involved. So no wonder that they're not announcing it. They didn't announce it the last time. We just happened to find out. But these, again, these drills taking place in the exact same location, so we can kind of presume that it's going to be a similar situation, a similar scenario. And it's taking place around the same time as this Jade Helm stuff that's taking place all across the country. And I know a lot of people have gone from the dismissive to the paranoid about Jade Helm, but it's clearly an exercise that would that it involves cracking down on the American population. But these drills, these are national drills, but these local drills are taking place at the same time. So this is not the first time we've had that this year. Remember, we had a training exercise in South Carolina recently regarding hurricanes or allegedly hurricane preparation that involved police and military personnel going door to door near Charleston and doing wellness checks door
Yeah,
to
I
door.
saw that.
So.
Wellness checks. And I mean, when you call 911 and get a cop to do a wellness check, it usually ends up that the person gets shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And now these drills, the wellness check drills, were done in coordination with the National Guard, and it was done all over the state. And I got to witness these drills personally because I didn't know anything about them until I saw an alarming amount of military personnel on the street. And when I saw, caravans or convoys of military trucks go out by the airport in Florence, and you would see military vehicles parked out in front of the airport, and then they had tents, these tents, the mobile operating bases, type tents, and they had signs for the FEMA region, which I think ours is four, but they had FEMA region signs posted up on the highways. Military personnel were all out and about in the cities. There were the Humvees, the troop trucks, and all that stuff was parked out in front of the airport. And when you drove past it later on that night, they had buses, civilian buses, out with them as well. And when I found out that this was part of a statewide drill, because the local news media did report on it either the late night before the drills or the morning of the drills, unfortunately, it didn't really draw the attention of the average person in Florence. I don't think they even noticed the military vehicles, to be honest. But, and there's no real reason to pay attention to the local media around here. It's just no reason to watch that. But so you really wouldn't have known unless you saw it. But they took place all across South Carolina, and some of the areas south of Florence, actually, there were a lot of helicopters flying over, and there was ordnance being, detonated. So if it's a hurricane drill and it's all about bringing food and water to people who are stranded and without power, then what are you blowing up? That's the question. And again, this was out near Charleston. There's a small town, and I don't remember the name of the small town. I'd have to look it up. But they had civilian personnel and military personnel going door to door, doing wellness checks as part of the drills. So.
That's messed up. I mean, the one time that I saw buses involved with any type of law enforcement was when we were down in New York City for the very first Occupy March. And those buses all zoomed in and arrested 700 people.
Just conveniently there.
Yes, they were hiding under the bridge, by the way. Go ahead.
I was just say these. This was out in the open in the daytime. I just happened to drive by and saw all these military vehicles. And I pay attention to military vehicles now. I don't know what it's like in where you're at, but in South Carolina we have a lot of local armories. So it's not unusual per se to see a military Humvee driving around the area because they travel from one armory to another. So it's not because you see one doesn't mean that there's anything out of the ordinary. But when you see huge convoys and you see buses and you see tents put outside the airport with the FEMA regions, it kind of draws my attention. But you know, it's I ask a few people around town if they noticed anything about it. They didn't really seem to even notice anything was going on. And I also say that from what I can gather, I believe private contractors were involved as well in this drill. The one regarding the hurricanes, I think private contractors were involved, not this past one, but the one that I'm referencing took place all across the state. They had private contractors involved as well.
And do you get a lot of hurricanes in South Carolina? I don't
Well,
quite remember you
yeah, we
guys
do.
getting hit too badly.
Well, we have not had as many in the last few years, but we get one. We just had a tropical storm hit here, but it's back in the 80s we had a hurricane called Hugo, and that was pretty devastating. It destroyed a lot of the area where I live in Florence, and power was out for quite some time, and they actually had the National Guard come out. I remember that as a child. So yeah, we do have a threat of hurricanes, but again, I don't know any situation in which the military blowing something up would be a way to provide relief.
That's true. That's very true. So, do you know now, was this only the sheriff that was working with the military, or were your state police involved?
I guess I should make clear that I think I convoluted two drills up and wasn't clear about which ones were which. There was one taking place right now in Columbia, and that's just the sheriff's department with the special forces groups. And the one I was talking about in terms of hurricanes took place a few months ago, and that was all across the state. And that involved the National Guard. That involved It was actually a federal drill, but so it involved the U.S. military, the National Guard, state police, sheriff's departments, local police, emergency management agencies, and that sort of thing.
Wow. Well, that's pretty impressive. Have you been able to go out there and get any type of interviews, or do you just have some inside sources that you can tap?
I've got sources that can provide me information. This stuff is closed to the media. The sheriff's department, the last time and this time, was pretty clear that they're not going to answer any questions about what they're doing. They're not going to speak to the media beyond letting them know that they're going to be participating in drills, so not to be alarmed when the explosives start. But they've been pretty clear that they're going to be tight-lipped about it.
Now, have you seen a lot of military aircraft flying over, helicopters in formation and things of that nature?
Not over the recent months. There was a time when there were actually military jets, not just transport jets, but combat jets. There were transport helicopters and combat helicopters flying over on a regular basis a few months ago. But maybe a year ago, I think it would be the proper time frame. But nothing so far in terms of beyond the hurricane drill when they had helicopters flying over.
Yeah, we've seen them a bit here over the last few months. I'm between the Niagara Falls Air Base and the Syracuse Base. And I'm trying to think, it might have been a month, maybe 2 months ago. I managed to get a picture. We were all inside and we're like, what is that noise? And I managed to get a picture. There were like eight military helicopters all flying in formation overhead. And I mean, that's not something that you see too often. So it caught me by surprise.
Yeah, there was a period where it was happening a couple of times a day where you'd see not just maybe a Chinook or a jet, but then you might see two or three Apaches fly over. So it was, I you know, it's not happening now. It's stopped pretty abruptly, but it was pretty clear that there was some type of, coordinated fashion. It wasn't that they were just passing over.
Right. As far as your personal assessment, and I do trust your assessment, what are your thoughts on this whole military training across throughout different states and everyone keeping tight-lipped? Any theories on that? I mean, are you a part of the conspiracy theory, or do you think that there's actually a lot of truth to us being a little bit concerned over what we're seeing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the conspiracy theory is supposed to be, but I mean, if anybody will look around and say, "Oh no, they're not planning for, militarization," or say, "Well, I mean, you're about 20 years too late on that one." But I guess there's been this divide, I should say that, that this is what generally happens, is that you have issues that crop up, whether it's vaccinations, whether it's gun rights, whether it's military exercises. And one group, you get individuals who have, a working brain, and they start to question these issues, and then the media gets involved, and they put up certain people who start speaking out about it, who belong to one, political pedigree, and then you're able to turn this into, a partisan thing, right? Where the liberals don't believe Jade Helm is a problem, and the conservatives believe it's, an Obama Muslim plot to take over America. So, but yeah, these things are very concerning, and I think it's pretty clear what they are. I mean, this is, these drills. There were drills where American citizens were being detained, and they were begging for food, and the U.S. military was training not to give them food, and all that kind of stuff. So, how could you not be concerned about this if, whatever your political pedigree? How could you not be concerned that the U.S. military is training? And it does appear to be a martial law drill. It doesn't appear to be anything related to some type of major preparation for an invasion or anything. It looks like a domestic clampdown. So yeah, I'm very concerned with it, and I think it's just one more part of, an ongoing. It's been ongoing for decades, especially since the 80s. But just increasing year after year after year, and over the last few years, it's become commonplace to see these types of drills. If I had done an article on South Carolina sheriff's departments doing drills with U.S. military, 7 years ago, it would have been huge news. And now we just kind of look at it and go, oh, well, the sheriff's department's doing more drill with special forces, and that's that, and we move on to something else. So it's become commonplace. I mean, here in South Carolina, we've just had two drills with the U.S. military and domestic law enforcement, and that's just this year. So, in addition to the Jade Helm stuff. So, yeah, it's extremely concerning to me. So, I guess if that makes me a conspiracy theorist to think that the country is becoming more and more militarized and there are plans for martial law, then I'll have to do my best with that title, I guess.
Well, we listened to a clip. I think it was maybe it was on Monday that I had actually heard Sunday morning while I was visiting my family at like 7 a.m. And it really shocked me because they invoked Alex Jones on mainstream news at 7 a.m. on a Sunday during a roundtable. I don't know if you caught that clip, but it was on ABC, and they were talking about Jade Helm. And what a bunch of conspiracy theorists, including the governor of Texas and Tom Cruise. No, what's his first name? Cruise. You know what I'm the Texas guy.
Ted Cruz?
Ted Cruz, yes. Raising concern about Jade Helm and what a bunch of tinfoil hat wearing crazies they were because. You know, why should we be concerned? And at the very end of that interview, so after they made all of us look like paranoids, and of course, my mother's sitting there kind of laughing along with the ABC news host, going, ha ha ha, these people are so paranoid. You know, and like you said, 7 years ago, this might have been an issue, but now that they've groomed us to be used to this stuff, nobody bats an eye at it, right? But at the very end of that interview, I don't remember who it was on the roundtable, but they had made a comment equating people who are paranoid about military drills to also people who don't want forced vaccinations and people who don't want to eat GMO foods. I was like, oh, how ingenious was that? You know, to put us all into this lunatic basket, like anyone questioning what is going on seems to have a mental defect.
Yeah, it's wrong thing. But yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to point out, though. Look who's questioning Jade Helm. It's Rick Perry and Ted Cruz. These people are military fanatics, right? You think for a minute that Ted Cruz is concerned about the military being on the streets? This guy is a militant, radical warmonger. He doesn't care about that stuff. If he were president, he would bask in the military being on the streets. For God's sakes, he's a Republican. They love this stuff. So what they're doing is they're using people like Ted Cruz, who is a nut job, to question Jade Helm, and then you can turn it into conservatives, Republicans, Tea Partiers question Jade Helm because they think it's an Obama Muslim plot. And then you could turn the lefties into looking at the people who question Jade Helm as automatically assuming that the people who question it are Republicans and that they can embrace it. You know, the people who 8 years ago were opposed to, you know, military invasion and militarism across the country when Bush was president can now embrace it when their guy's president. And it turns it into a partisan issue. So do you either support Jade Helm and you support forced vaccinations because you're a trendy liberal, or you oppose Jade Helm for now, and oppose these other things because Obama's in office. You know, and trust me, if they elect a Republican on inauguration day, it'll change. A whole population changes their opinion on inauguration day.
And you're absolutely right, because then they invoked Jon Stewart making fun of the people who were questioning Jade Helm, and everybody laughed about it. So there
Yeah,
you go.
because years ago when Bush was president, Stephen Colbert had a segment on Jon Stewart making fun, attacking the U.S. government for creating military drills because he was concerned that they were going to declare some type of martial law scenario. And that was part of Jon Stewart's show before Colbert had his own show.
Right,
So,
I remember when he was in there.
it's a funny clip. But, you know, Jon Stewart all of a sudden is supporting military drills that they have to do with, martial law and that sort of thing. That should tell you something, you
Well,
know?
right, and it's going to keep us all safe. I mean, we've been put in that mindset where we need to be hiding under a table with our hands wrapped over our heads unless the government's here to save us, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you could see again, you know, it was okay to question this stuff when Bush was president. Now Jon Stewart, whose brother was like the head of the New York or of Goldman Sachs or something, I can't remember which bank it is, but he's a,
Right.
you know, part of a banking family, is claiming that you're a crazy conspiracy theorist if you question the fact that the military is on the streets and practicing to put American citizens into camps, even though years ago his own show was a progenitor of that ideology or that perspective.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, great segue, though. You brought up banks. You had a story the other day. Looking at why do bankers wage war to stop national banks?
Yeah, that's I hope a lot of people go read this because I think it's important, and there's so many different elements that we could look at to approach this, but just to give people an idea of some context here, recently the DPR, which is the Donetsk People's Republic, which is the break-off separatist region of Ukraine, has nationalized their banking system. And they've done a number of things of economic reform. Now, they didn't have a central bank to begin with because they were part of Ukraine. That was the Kiev central bank that they were a part of. But since they broke away, that doesn't apply to them. But there were banks inside the DPR, and this includes Lugansk and all those areas. One of the major banks there was this Igor Kolomoisky, who is a banking oligarch, one of the richest men in Ukraine. He helped fund a lot of those neo-Nazis that have taken over Western Ukraine. Well, they nationalized the banking system there, and some of those banks they closed, some of the banks they kept open. The Kiev government was supposed to have continued to give the social safety net payouts to the citizens of the DPR, but of course they stopped when the separatists took over. So they're now using those banks that they've nationalized to pay the benefits to the citizens in the DPR, so older people, the disabled, that sort of thing, their version of social safety net. So they're using that, and of course that has really drawn the ire of NATO and the United States and the UK, you know, the Western banking countries, I guess you should say, the banking oligarchs are not happy with this at all. And they're not happy with this for a number of reasons, but you can see why the US has and NATO has kind of intensified their attack on the DPR. Now, there's also been an attack. If you look at countries that have a national banking system, they are Syria Afghanistan, or they did anyway, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Iran, Cuba, North Korea. What's the common denominator there,
The
right?
axis of evil, right?
Axis of evil, because, and I'm not pretending that this is the only reason that these countries are being attacked, right? We've got oil, opium, geopolitical, positioning, no bid contracts, mineral deposits, all this stuff are there's many reasons for one act, but certainly the national banking issue is one of them. Now, I need to point out that there's a difference between a central bank and a national bank, or at least in the way that I'm trying to present it here, because what we have is a central bank. It's a privatized central bank. It's run by private bankers. Our money supply is determined by private bankers. Our essentially fiscal policy is determined by private bankers. Where banks are bailed out, and everyone else is crushed at the bottom and at our expense. A national bank is something different. A national bank is what I've talked about here before, which would be a bank that is, run by the treasury essentially, and it's run for the benefit of the country. And we've had that before, and they got destroyed by banks, by the banking oligarchy. But the difference is a national bank functions for the benefit of the government. It's not an independent agency. It's not a private agency. It's an agency of the government, and with that, you can do all kinds of things. You can have credit stimulus to create fix infrastructure, to create jobs, to fund social safety net protections, and that sort of thing. And you can do that without really an issue of inflation and debt, which is very important. But what I'm arguing in this article is, if you look back, I've done an article in the past regarding each of the nations that I mentioned earlier that have this nationalized banking system. Now, most of those countries have squandered that ability to do great things with their national banks, but it's still a threat to the banking system, the banking oligarchy, the Anglo-American banking oligarchy, the privatized banking oligarchy, I guess we could say. So it's a major threat. My question is, if it's a major threat to the banking oligarchy, if nationalized banks are major threats to the banking oligarchy, why are so many activists in this country so opposed to nationalizing the banks? Or nationalizing the Federal Reserve, for instance. Why are we so hesitant to nationalize the Federal Reserve as opposed to just ending it or letting it be? And I think part of this reason is that there's some solutions that maybe aren't as well thought out, and there's some ideologies behind these demands and solutions that have been put out by many activists that are in actuality, funded by bankers, and that's Austrian school economics for one. But the idea of ending the Fed, that doesn't do much to resist the banking oligarchy that we have in this country to begin with. Now, of course, one of the first things it would do would be remove the lender of last resort. If you just ended the Fed, you'd remove the lender of last resort for the federal government, and what you would see is an immediate collapse, an economic collapse. But that being said, obviously the banks would much rather prefer to keep the Federal Reserve System than completely end it. But ending it doesn't do anything to stop the banking oligarchy, right, or the banking domination of the national economy. And I can prove that by pointing out that even before the Federal Reserve was formed in 1913, the control over the American economy had already been given to private banks, right? It was already run by J.P. Morgan, who was a private banker. He was a Rothschild banking agent that was sent over here to the United States. He was instrumental in helping set up the Federal Reserve System, but he already had control over the American economy, because the private banks, even before J.P. Morgan had been able to seize the U.S. financial system and monetary system, because they were essentially going into default, But the private banks had run rampant across the U.S. They had these systems of booms and busts that were taking place all across the country. It's often presented in by some researchers, oh, they were only local booms and busts. Well, yeah, too bad if you were in the area where there was the boom, over there was the bust. But there were also full-blown national banking crises that were taking place as a result of this ability, this free banking idea, this free market ideology, basically. So, we've had two prior successful attempts at the establishment of a national bank here, and both times the national bank was an attenuated version of what we really should have had, but both times they were fought tooth and nail by banking oligarchs and the agents of those oligarchs. Now, obviously, those national banks were subject to, some corrupt influences in them. I'm not gonna pretend, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here and say that the National Bank was a good institution, so everything about it was perfect and everyone in it was perfect. That's not true. There were a lot of nefarious influences in the bank. But the truth is, they were fought tooth and nail by the banking oligarchy. And each time those banks were destroyed, that's the First Bank of the United States and the Second Bank of the United States, we saw a massive economic crisis, a depression, a panic result from getting rid of those banks. And that's, I think, one of the unfortunate parts of this, narrative that kind of is pervasive in the alternative media, that Andrew Jackson was a good guy. Andrew Jackson was more of a banking oligarch than anyone in the Second Bank of the United States, because he was trying to destroy a national bank and give the banks free rein again. And he caused a terrible economic crisis as a result of his actions. And if anybody thinks Andrew Jackson was a great guy, you should ask an American Indian how great he was. So, not a
Is
good.
that why they want to replace him on the 20?
They should go ahead and replace him. That's fine with me. If you have a national bank, you have this ability to provide economic stability. You have the ability to provide what's called credit stimulus. This is different from money printing. This is different from borrowing at interest, that sort of thing. It doesn't, if you have credit stimulus, it doesn't create debt to the U.S. government, and it doesn't create inflation. You can fund governments, you can invest in infrastructure, you can invest in scientific progress, this credit-based investment in private infrastructure and private businesses, large businesses, small business, all this kind of stuff, social safety nets, all that. It removes the necessity for any austerity measures, any dependence upon the IMF or the World Bank or private bankers or international bankers. It completely removes that. So, when you look at it from that angle, when you see the national bank removes all the dependence that you need on private bankers, and it essentially gives you the ability to have your cake and eat it too, if you're operating this from a national government, then why in the world would any activists argue against the nationalization of the Federal Reserve or the central bank in the country that they live? And that's essentially the, argument of the article that I wrote.
I guess the one big question that I have in regards to what to do with the Federal Reserve is, even if we did some sort of bank nationalization, are there any leaders in this country that you could trust to run something with that much money? You know what I mean? I mean, money begets greed, and I don't think there's any group that I really trust in this nation to do it the right way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not really the fault of the bank, though. That's
No,
the
it's
fault of the
true,
fact
but
that we have a population of parasites, in the government. But there, you got to have a step in that right direction. And if you nationalize the bank, you're going to hit the banks where it hurts. And that's it's kind of the idea that if you're not fighting bankers, then who are you fighting? The idea, I've promoted taxing Wall Street before, 1% Wall Street sales tax. Yeah, that's going to bring in a lot of money, and then you're going to have to fight Congress, and you're going to have to fight all the parasites there for the the proceeds of the money, but that money is being taken away from the banks, and it's crippling them from having to engage in, from being able to engage in derivatives and a lot of these collateralized debt obligations and that sort of thing. If you nationalize the banks, you've taken away a lot of this, or nationalize the Fed anyway, you've taken away this essential control over the money supply and the financial system from the private bank. So once you've done that, you've returned it into the proper hands. Now how that's operated, that's another story. That's up to us to make sure that that area gets cleaned out. But once you've crippled the banks, you've helped eliminate a major part of your resistance.
Now, any thoughts on this Chinese conglomerate that has been seemingly forming globally for the new international Chinese bank? Have you paid attention to any of that?
Yeah, I know a little bit about it, and I think what you're seeing is a lot of people have recognized that China is the emerging economy because we've thrown it away, we've given it to them, and we paid them to take it, and they're becoming the new industrial power in the world, and that there's not going to be any change in that from what we can tell unless there's a miracle. So a lot of these governments are investing in that bank and reaping the benefits, and of course the U.S. is playing along right now as if it's angry about it, but this has all been planned. I mean, we paid to have our factories moved to China years ago, so this was all in the planning stages. So this is no big surprise to me, to be honest. It's going to be another factor in why the United States collapses eventually.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we have to look at the whole TPP thing that's going on and now all the debates about fast track. One of the things that I was looking at is I think last night there was another vote, wasn't there, for the TPP about whether or not to allow fast track? And
I think the Democrats voted to support it now.
yeah, that's what I caught. Like right before I went to bed last night, I thought that they voted down. And now it looks like they're voting up for a an argument over whether or not to allow it. But initially, it was they just said no and they shut it down. And the bad news is, and this is something that I didn't realize, is that if we say no fast track, that somehow puts China now into the driver's seat.
Well, I don't know how it does that. I mean, the issue with fast track to me, I mean, that is another one of those red herrings because yeah, we don't want fast track. Sure, we don't want to. You can't be passing bills that you don't know what's in them.
Right.
But
Or
at the
read
same,
them.
yeah. So obviously we're against fast track, but we're against the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So fast track or not, the issue is voting no, and you could tell early on that this is one of those agendas that's going to move forward, whether you oppose it or you don't. You go out and you march, and then they say, "Oh, people don't support it, so we'll come back in about 6 months." And then the march is about half the strength that it was. Then you come back 6 months later, and then nobody cares anymore. So, I support voting no against the fast track, but voting no against this whole bill. It's a terrible, terrible bill, and it's gonna be NAFTA all over again. It's gonna be GATT all over again with a bunch of added internet control, mechanisms and probably some gun control mechanisms written into it. So.
Absolutely. I think I was having a conversation with a friend who is always counter to my views, and I think the assessment that China would be in the driver's seat was that right now with the TPP, you're taking all these small nations and making them a conglomerate, so they have special trading benefits between each other, and as a group makes them more powerful than, say, China on their own. But by knocking out the fast track, which then, of course, they're crying is going to damage the TPP and all the negotiations that have been done, as that knocks the legs out of the TPP, we now don't have this conglomerate, so China becomes the major trading partner, right?
Well, my understanding is that the fast track is only it has nothing to do with the contents of the bill. It's just the method in which it's going to be passed.
Well, right, without negotiation, though. And Obama's concerned that if we don't have fast track, then this is going to get stuck in long-term negotiations in Congress and line item deleting parts of the agreement that he supposedly spent all this time negotiating in private.
Oh, so the argument is that the negotiations, which have already been done, will fall apart when Congress
Exactly.
gets its hands on it. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, it's fine with me.
Yeah, me too.
Vote against it. You know, if it doesn't pass at all, it's a non-issue. So that's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, but, me too. What's going on too with I mean, this is a rat hole, but we have about 15 minutes. What's going on in the Middle East now? I mean, what's your take on all that? I see now they're accusing Assad of using chemical weapons again.
Yeah, that's an interesting that's an interesting propaganda narrative. They're getting harder and harder to hold together, I guess. But as the population over here gets dumber and dumber, I guess they don't need to. So the recent propaganda coming out of the Western press, the next to recent, I guess, has been that Assad, essentially the idea that you get from reading these articles is that Assad did not give up his chemical weapons and that he gassed innocent civilians in Syria with sarin. Well, you got to read a number of articles and actually look, don't look at the titles, just look at what they're saying, right? And what they're saying is that what they've actually found is weapons inspectors went into a number of areas where toxic agents were produced, and they tested. They found positive results for trace amounts of chemical precursors to toxic agents. Doesn't mean that he didn't get rid of his chemical weapons. It means that they found trace amounts of chemical precursors to chemical weapons in an area where they were manufactured. Now, to my knowledge, you can't commit a terrorist attack or a chemical weapons attack with trace amounts of chemical precursors. I mean, this is not the chemical agent. It's a chemical precursor that you would need to manufacture the agent, and it's trace amounts. So they're trying to present this as if Assad has, you know, kept a stockpile of chemical weapons. Remember Iraq? Remember that? So he's kept a stockpile of chemical weapons.
Yeah, there was a story that came out about the chemical weapons factory that they supposedly found after the fact in Iraq.
Yeah. So, you know, all of this is it's a propaganda narrative to make people believe that Assad has not gotten rid of his chemical weapons. And, of course, that's not true. He's gotten rid of his chemical weapons. And these, again, trace amounts of chemical precursors. That's all this is. And of course, they're going to be there. Of course, there's going to be trace amounts of chemical precursors in these places. There were chemical weapons stockpiled in them for years. So, right. Yeah, there'll be trace amounts. So that's nothing to get worried about. But what they try to do is that they then you have articles, and these articles will mention those trace amounts that have been found, and this is of agents like sarin. But then they'll mention that there were chemical weapons attacks all over Syria recently in these small villages in rebel-held territory. And what you find out is that it's not sarin that was used, it's chlorine
right.
that's used in these areas. So then they say, you know, Assad is using chlorine. But if you just read through the article quickly, if you didn't pay attention to what it said, if you just read the title, your belief would be that Assad kept chemical weapons and then used them across the country. But all right, so it's chlorine that was used in these random villages out and about in Syria, in rebel-held territory, and they're blaming this on Assad. But here's the problem. National governments don't tend to use chlorine-based weapons. Chlorine-based weapons are weapons that are usually used by guerrilla fighters because that's all they can get their hands on, because chlorine is an industrial agent and it's more available. You can buy chlorine to do a lot of different things. We've had numerous reports, and this goes back to 2 years ago when they tried to frame Assad for another chemical weapons attack. This was the Khan al-Assal and in the Ghouta region, where they tried to blame Assad for chemical weapons attacks. It was chlorine, and they turned out that it was the rebels, the death squads, that had taken over a chlorine factory in the area and had actually videotaped themselves loading chlorine onto artillery shells and using chlorine on civilians. So We had weapons experts and researchers looking at the nature of the weapons and saying, chlorine, basically, when it blows up, what happens is that it turns into water and air droplets, but it dissipates quickly. So it's not, if you're going to use a chemical agent, it's not something that sticks around for a while and spreads out. It's something that dissipates quickly. If you get into the cloud, you'll die, but it's very localized. So it's not even very useful to use, especially if you're a national government. Now, if you're a guerrilla fighter, it's better than nothing. But in addition to that, the question remains, with all of the media attention on Assad, I mean, if the guy looks in one direction in the wrong way, the media jumps on it and promotes it as a terrorist act. With all the chemical weapons inspectors that are in Syria, with the agreement with the United Nations, with the West, sharpening its teeth at the opportunity to invade, why in the world would Assad use a chemical weapon now, especially when he has been winning? And not only that, why would he use chlorine? So I mean, nothing about it makes sense. And when you read the articles, what you find out is that the media is trying to insinuate, they're not lying necessarily, but they are, they're doing this by distortion. You read the articles and it implies that Assad kept chemical weapons and used sarin across the country, and none of that is true. It's a complete false propaganda narrative. Now, chlorine weapons may have been used, but you can look at our precious moderate rebels for that.
Right, that we're training
Yeah.
officially.
Yeah, official moderate rebels. Moderate cannibals again. I guess these guys cook the heads that they cut off before they eat them, I guess. And that's
Oh,
what
I
makes them
didn't see
moderate. No, I'm
that.
just being sarcastic, but there's also been another propaganda narrative that has come out against Assad, and this has been that his Syrian National Security Bureau chief, Ali Mamluk, they're saying that he was arrested because he was trying to participate in a coup attempt against Assad. And this happened 2 days ago, where the Telegraph was the one that put this story out, where Mamluk has been arrested. He's on house arrest. He tried to overthrow Assad. This is a sign and symbol that Assad's grip is weakening, even on his own government forces. And while the few people in the West who read that article saw it and probably thought, "Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense," the people in Syria were not convinced, because they could see Ali Mamluk right beside Bashar al-Assad in a meeting with the Iranians. So the guy wasn't on house arrest. He was actually in a meeting with the president at the time.
And you
And
actually have friends in Syria, do you not?
yeah, I
I
do.
mean, like eyes and ears who can see things.
Yeah, I do. And they can tell me, what's happening in a number of locations. And, I was even sent screenshots of the guy in the meeting, and
Wow.
it's like, so he's not. And then you look at the other reports. All you got to do is Google him, and you see that this is, I don't know what this poor guy has done necessarily personally to the media, but they have attacked him many times. He's apparently been poisoned and killed. He's been arrested and imprisoned. He's been killed in terrorist attacks, I believe. He's died about 5 or 6 times in the mainstream media. And he's still there, and he's still doing his job, and he's still working with Bashar al-Assad. And in fact, I think the International Business Times had to do an article and say, national spy chief in Syria appears one day after he's pronounced in house arrest. So it's if you believe any of this stuff that comes out of the media, it's just false. It's entirely false. It's an attempt to break the will of the Syrian people and to present this, idea of inevitability. And it's a technique called mind war that was, pioneered by Satanist and pedophile Michael Aquino, and I can't remember his friend's name, Paul Vallely, that was written in the 80s. So.
I mean, to me, when we talk about Syria, of course, we have to kind of include the whole ISIS narrative that has now bloomed into this, global ISIS hiding under every bed and in every closet. And one of the things that we were looking at the other day is now this new narrative, of course, with the internet radicalizing every teenager and anyone who dissents against the government, radicalizing them into an ISIS. ISIS is now, did you hear the new head of the NSA talking about the internet becoming a tool of war? Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking. We actually heard that yesterday. They've declared now that the internet is a tool of war. And this narrative, you know, as we're arming these rebels and we're declaring governments to be terroristic and giving us the ability, you know, to take them down, or at least the argument for the people who aren't paying attention to take them down, it makes you wonder where that's going to take us in the end. I mean, what we have Ukraine that's still percolating, right? We have Syria that's percolating. I saw that there was some potential new agreement with Iran. Did you catch that one?
Between the U.S. and Iran?
Between the U.S. and Iran, yeah, for their nuclear.
Yeah, that's all a theater. Don't look for that to last. The reason there's been an agreement actually between Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia in regards to a potential military invasion of Syria. You wonder if that happens, is Iran going to be able to sit on the sidelines, or are they going to be able to come out and directly confront the Turks and the Saudis? And if that's the case, what will that do to the Iran nuclear deal? And by the way, the Iran nuclear deal was a rotten deal for Iran. This was not fair at all. This shows that Iran was more than willing to work with other countries. But you know, they had every right to do everything that they were doing. This is a rotten deal. The sanctions are about to come off of Iran, or at least from most countries, on June 30th, which is a reason why there's been such talk about a potential military invasion of Syria by the Turks and the Saudis in the next few weeks up till the end of June. So. There's concern about that, but this is theater in regards to the domestic presentation of the Iran deal. Of course, you know, the Republicans are acting like it's the new Hitler who's going to blow up the earth if Iran gets a nuclear bomb, which they're not. There's no evidence that they're even trying to do. And you know, the Obama idiots are all screaming about how this is a great deal, this is great diplomacy, and it's not. It's imperialism. But this was talked about by the Brookings Institution for some time about how the Israelis are screaming about it. So it's a method to possibly provoke an Israeli strike on Iran. And, of course, if they respond, then the United States is going to come in and fight and die to the last American to protect Israel. So I don't expect this deal to last between Iran and the United States. I personally expect it may not happen the next 30 days, but it will probably happen in the next couple of years, that this deal with Iran will fall apart because of some minor detail that Iran refuses to follow. And that may happen in the next 30 days, by the way. There's no way to predict these things, but I look for a minor detail in the agreement to be so onerous to Iran that they can't agree to it, and then the whole deal falls apart. Then there's sanctions, and then there's some type of military action on the part of Israel or the United States, depending on what the military culture is like here in the with the new administration. And it'll probably be pretty bad because it's pretty bad already.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I caught yesterday was Obama apparently came out and pledged more military aid to reassure its Persian Gulf allies on the Iran deal. Saudi Arabia, of course, is one of them. And when we take a look at what's going on in Yemen with the Houthi, the Iranian Houthi, and Saudi Arabia in there bombing the crap out of them, it makes you wonder where this is going to lead.
Yeah, and of course, who are they bombing the Houthis in support of? They're bombing them in support of Al-Qaeda. And nobody seems to draw the parallels here that they're Al-Qaeda's air force. But, this is Saudi Arabia is sort of a paper tiger when it comes to their military strength, so they're not going to be able to do anything against the Houthis on their own. The Egyptians are stupidly joining in with the Saudi Arabians.
I know. I questioned that when that happened. Where did that come from?
Well, that's the benefit of the Saudi money that's going to the Egyptian military and government. That's when people, when we were talking about this issue after Morsi had been deposed, a lot of people were asking me, why are the Saudis still giving money to Egypt? Well, this is why, you know, and the Egyptians, this is really a foolish thing for them to do. And if they continue to go on this path, I think they're going to seal their own destruction. So Sisi must not have been the intelligent leader that he appeared to be to begin with. But you know, again, this is something that looks like it may be turned against Syria soon as well. The Turks have been apparently adding more troops onto the border, the northern border with Syria, or the Turkish southern border with Syria, and this looks like a preparation for some type of invasion. And of course, if you look at the areas that are most heavily populated with death squads, it's the northern Syria border with Turkey and part of the southern border with Jordan and the southwestern border with Israel. So
And
that's
what's
what.
interesting is we have Turkey and Jordan were the two countries that we supposedly had the CIA in training what became ISIS, right?
Yeah. Exactly. That's they're still maintaining the training bases there. They're coming in from Turkey and Jordan, and of course Israel is supporting them as well.
Yeah, I
But
say never trust Turkey.
no, that's nobody's ever benefited from that. But the you know, the Houthi situation, there's no evidence, by the way, that Iran is arming the Houthis. They're apparently buying a lot of these arms from the black market. But this is what Saudi Arabia is worried about in Yemen. They're worried that the Iranian arc of influence is now going to expand to Yemen, because if the Houthis take over Yemen, Iranian influence will begin in Yemen if the Houthis take over. So that's what Saudi Arabia is so worried about. They don't want Iran on their doorstep.
Right. Well, I hate to do this, but wow, was that a fast hour? Did that even seem like an hour?
No, it didn't. I'm surprised we're out of time
It's
already.
I know
It's
we're down to
like
the last 30 seconds, if you can even believe it. Well, Brandon, it is always a huge treat when you have the day off and you can come on in the morning. I greatly appreciate it. I know the listeners do too. Make sure you have a nice Friday. It's a nice day today. A good weekend. And you have a show for me for Monday, right?
I do. I'll be sending it in shortly.
All right. Well, make sure you have a great weekend. Everybody, make sure you stick around tonight. It's Friday night. We have a Truth on the Tracks that runs tonight, as well as a live anti-tyranny news with Josh, Primer Time with Michael and Nick. United Front Radio with Danielle and Kyle, and Anti-Media with Levon. All right, everybody, have an awesome Friday, and we will catch up with you on Monday. Everybody, take care.